But what are your guys' first impressions of this team from what you've seen, what you've heard? And you know, should there be an excitement level for this team this year?
Well, I mean, I think there's going to be an excitement level. I mean, when you're preseason ranked at 20, there's obviously a little bit of buzz going around. And Illinois State, they're returning a lot of people, got majority of the running back core coming back, got receivers here as well. It's just a little bit of questions on what's going back in the quarterback room. But when you have a head coach like Brock's back, who's been here for decades, you have a culture built in that a lot of the FCS can't really match. So there's going to be excitement going around for sure.
Yeah, I think this team's very athletic. It seems like they got a lot of the returning guys coming back, including Daniel Sopkowitz, King. A lot of those type of guys were doing very good last season, and now you're looking at it and seeing, can their trenches hold up as much as their athletes can hold up, especially going into a game like Iowa. They're going to be bigger than us. It's pretty obvious. They're going to be a bigger team, stronger team, but it depends on how fast and how much space these players can create in the game.
Some big news today out of Iowa. Their head coach, Kirk Ferentz. I don't know if I'm saying
it's
that.
Ferentz? It might be Ferentz.
Ferentz.
Coach F,
whatever. He suspended the first game of the season against Illinois State. I saw some social media replies. Everyone was kind of baking Illinois State a little bit because it was like that LeBron meme where he holds up his hands. Yeah. It's like, you're going to be suspended against Illinois State. Kind of a little shameful, kind of hurt a little bit, but that's definitely some big news. He was illegally recruiting someone. It was about Cade.
It was.
Okay. So their coach will not be against Illinois State. Do you think that makes any of a difference in the game?
I think it does. And the whole situation really makes me laugh because, like, tampering for Cade McNamara, it's like illegally taking someone's Bored Ape NFT in 2024. Like, why are you trying to steal something that's worthless? Like, that's a complete waste of time. He has had a terrible offseason. And so, like, why are you tampering for him? And just not having your head coach is crucial. Like, I know Michigan kind of got away with it for a little bit. Michigan was also a freakishly talented team.
Yeah.
And Iowa, they've been having these offensive problems for what seems like years and years and years now. And now you're losing a head coach. So it's just going to be a huge mess on the offensive end. And I'm not saying the Redbirds are going to win. I think that'd be a crazy statement to say. But if there is a chance that we would ever beat a Big Ten team the caliber of Iowa, it would be this upcoming game.
Yeah, I feel like if you have a good head coach that has been in your system for a while now, he's going to know how to try and figure out ways to beat a team that doesn't have their head coach with them. Because a team like Iowa, we know they're not good at offense. Their defense is what keeps their team together and intact. But Brock Speck's been doing this for so long, and yes, it may not be in the same thing, same conference or anything, but he'll know what he's going to be able to do against his team. And like you said, we don't know if they're going to win or not, but I feel like having a good head coach in football really just has so much more of an impact versus other sports.
And what we failed to mention is Iowa lost a key offensive piece this offseason in Torrey Taylor. He's now a punter for the Chicago Bears. So Iowa lost one of their best offensive pieces and now have a freshman punter, which is just huge for Illinois State.
I never thought about how much of a good punter makes an impact for a team like Iowa, who just has absolutely no offense.
They all say he's the best player on the team.
I know, yeah. And it makes sense. I mean, he got drafted fourth round in the Chicago, in the NFL draft, so I don't know.
Hard Knocks.
That is pretty funny. He was awesome in Hard Knocks. Yeah. He does not seem like he likes football. He seems like he's just here to make a paycheck, awesome.
He hates his Australian background and everything like that. They try to call him the crocodile punter and everything. Like, let's let him go play ball.
Let's take a look back on Illinois State last season in terms of football. I think they had a 6-5 record, 4-4 in conference. There was a point where they were ranked nationally in the FCS. Just kind of a weird up and down season where a couple games that should have gone their way. How do you think they fixed those problems this year and kind of like bounce back to be the team that they're kind of being projected to be right now?
Well, the thing is they didn't really change much, if I'm being honest. Yeah. They lost so many defensive players last year. Like, I want to say like it was double digits that were new players. All those players are back, so you just have another year of experience, and that's just really the big thing for Illinois State this season. Is in college sports, you really just can't beat experience because, you know, everybody's leaving young. If you just get years to build together, especially with a head coach, as we said, has been here for decades, it's just you can't match experience.
Yeah, I feel like it just all depends on their consistency. We saw all the flashes that they had last season. We saw them having good plays, and we saw one good drive turn into a bad drive, and one good defensive play turn into a 50-yard touchdown pass. It just depends on how much they really just try to limit the big plays on other teams and just trying to perfect their craft offensively, run the ball well, pass the ball well if it's either either Rittenhouse or if it's the new guy they brought in. It just depends on how much they really just care about perfecting their craft and their own schemes.
Yeah, I think that's crucial is what scheme they really want to build. It's just I have no experience in the locker room with Illinois State, so I can't tell what they're trying to cook up with this year. But when you return that many running backs and Rittenhouse being a more run-heavy quarterback, if they can cement like a solid running scheme, like let's say something like the Baltimore Ravens, we want to go like extreme with it. If you can get a scheme that can fit the players you have, who knows what's going to happen. And hey, if you're ranked 20th when you only went just above 500 last season, I think it says a lot about the expectations that Illinois State has this year.
And I also think one of the most underrated people in the whole conference we have right now is Daniel Sopkowicz.
Yeah.
This man had 923 receiving yards last year. That's not something that we really see that often at a school like Illinois State. And every single game that I myself commentated, he always had at least one big player, like a 25 to 30 yard catch like that. And especially against a team like Iowa, they have a lot of young DBs coming back. Sopkowicz is a junior right now, I'm pretty sure. So he knows how to try to mesh against a defense. He knows ways to go against a scheme, a 4-4, a 3-4, or a 4-3. So I think he's going to be a huge guy in a game like Iowa.
It honestly is impressive how many wide receivers they brought back this year. I mean, you mentioned Sopkowicz, but Braden Contreras is also back, Eddie Casper, just to name a few. So whoever ends up being the quarterback, that's definitely huge because he's already got some veteran targets, I guess you could say. And I think that's a good pivoting point for this kind of this last topic is who do we think is going to be the quarterback between Rittenhouse and Rubley? Because they got him from Kansas State, and Rittenhouse has been here since his freshman year, and we've seen him play since his freshman year here and there whenever he would come in for Annexed. So do you go with the guy that is coming from the bigger Division I program to small-town Illinois State, or do you go with the guy that's been in the system for the last 3 years?
Yeah, and that's what's really tough. I mean, I got to do more Rubley tape to decide if I think it's like that. It's just from my thinking from his point of say, like his side of it, if he was going to transfer from Kansas State to the FCS level, you have to think he was told he was going to start. I don't think he transferred to be a backup.
Sure.
But Rittenhouse, he knows the system. I mean, he had years behind Annexed, and it's just with us being looking like to be a more run-heavy team, I feel like that would be the right fit. But we'll see. We still got a week and a half before it's Iowa time.
I think what's interesting about these two is they have totally different play styles, and they have totally different builds. Rittenhouse is 5'11", 205, and Rubley is 6'3", 220. So if they're really trying to be more of a running team, obviously Rittenhouse is the type of guy for that. But if they're trying to go back to the Annexed type of play where you're just throwing the ball more and more and more, Rubley might be your guy. But I think you got to stay with the guy that knows the system, that's been in the system for so long. So I feel like Rittenhouse has to be the starter this coming Saturday. But also, they might be doing a lot more prep this next week and somebody else could just pop up right like that.
Did you say Rittenhouse was 215?
He is 205.
Oh, my gosh. 5'11", that's a mini tank they got going on. They got a pit bull at QB.
Well, it's interesting. I like that point that you brought up about the Annexed, you know, just throw. And if they're going to go with that in Rubley, it worked at times last year for sure. But I think the crazy thing about Rittenhouse is every time we've kind of seen him in the game, he's facilitated the offense really well just because of what we said. It's their team is almost built on the run, and that's really like his first option all the time, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing for college football.
No, not at all.
I feel like he has more of the modern type of quarterback build because nowadays in football, you got to be able to run a little bit. And Annexed, he could run if he really needed to, but he wasn't the guy to make a big running play like he needed to at certain points. Rittenhouse, when he came into the games, he had a nice little play to come in, maybe break a 10-yard run, get a first down. But it really just depends on if his arm can hold up. And with that size, his health also needs to stand up with that.
Will definitely be an interesting point, something to keep our eye on for the time being. Once again, next Saturday, August 31st, Illinois State will be traveling to Iowa, where the three of us will be calling the game, and we're super excited for that, so make sure to tune in for that next Saturday. When we come back, we're bringing back a part of the show that we did last year. It's called Rounding the Bases. We'll be right back here on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation, back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Joey LeMaster, and Julian Voss. We did this last year with Mikey and Braden. This was a part of the show that we came up with last year, and it was simply just called Rounding the Bases. Not very clever, but who really cares? Basically, what we did every week was we would bring in a new story from the past week in sports, and kind of just, it's something that we kind of feel passionate about, something we want to talk about, and we just kind of go on a nice little 5-minute ramble, each of us, and talk more and more about it. So, Joey, I'm going to start with you. I know you brought in a fun little story for us, and I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, so I'm just going to fangirl about a football team for a little bit. It's just I've been loving the offseason moves the Atlanta Falcons have made this offseason, and so this is a team I'm a big fan for heading into this football season. I know they got a lot of garbage for taking Michael Penix early in the draft, which is still a silly decision, but it might end up working out. He's looked great in preseason, and if Kirk goes down, we'll see what happens. But even with Kirk starting, I'm so impressed with this offense. I mean, Bijan Robinson is finally going to be able to emerge as the star he should be, even though Tyler Allgeier is an awesome backup as well. When you get Drake London, who's just a threat anytime the ball is thrown in the air, he's going to come down with it. And I think underrated accusation of this offseason is Darnell Mooney is finally going to have a quarterback that can hit a 30-yard throw. How game-changing is that?
Right.
I think Darnell Mooney, for all my fantasy enjoyers out there, fantasy football, look at Darnell Mooney later rounds. He's going undrafted in a lot of leagues. I think him and Kirk Cousins are going to be an awesome connection. And then you have Kyle Pitts, who's probably the opposite of a fantasy owner's dream. You never know what's going to happen with that man. He's lost people a lot of money. He's ruined some fantasy leagues, had some people do some punishments, but we'll see if this is finally the year. And then they got a good offensive line. But then we got to talk about the defensive acquisitions, because just in these past weeks, they've acquired Matthew Judon and signed Jesse Bates. They're going to have a safety core of Justin Simmons and Jesse Bates. Oh, excuse me. They signed Justin Simmons, not Jesse Bates. But that has to be the best safety core just in the NFL alone, just them two. And then you pair it with A.J. Terrell as well. They got a new head coach. I think they're finally starting to build something special in Atlanta. And with the South not being the greatest division, is it the South or the West?
South.
Yeah, with the South being as weak as that is, I think the Falcons are going to cause some damage this year. I think people got to get ready.
Yeah, it's weird because it's been like an offseason of two halves for them. They just got Judon, and I think a lot of, and of course they got Kirk Cousins. So really it's been like three halves, or three, whatever.
It's kind of the roller coaster where it goes up and
then
down.
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster, exactly. But because of the Michael Penix thing and how much slander they got for that and how much that really brought down their offseason. But in all reality, they've managed to pick on free agents and get some trades in training camp that have just really been able to bolster this roster. And they finally have a quarterback. That's been their biggest problem the last couple of years. They've never had a bad roster on paper. It's just been the fact that they're not getting good quarterback play. And of course, they're gonna, you don't know what you're getting with Kirk Cousins this year coming off the torn Achilles. Like, it might not be the Kirk Cousins we remember, but still, he has a great wide receiver core, as you already mentioned. And I do really think that this is a team that, it's not really even like they're gonna be sneaky anymore, because everyone's kind of looking at them and saying, hey, maybe they could be pretty solid this year.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you guys. This team has a lot of talented players, but I feel like one of the biggest things that really made them fail last year was having Arthur Smith as their offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
That man, he's a run-heavy type of coordinator, but he did not give Bijan Robinson the ball at all. And why are you not giving your top 10 guy the ball at all? And you're giving the ball to Cordarrelle Patterson, who was okay last season, and Tyler Allgeier, who also averaged around 12 points a game in fantasy. But like, that's not going to do much for your team winning games. So I think this team is very talented. Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. I think they took Penix because he's coming off an Achilles injury around 36, 37.
Sure.
So you gave him a fat contract, and then you got to bring in this rookie quarterback who's already around, what, 25?
Yeah,
25-ish. He's 25 years old.
Yeah, so he's not going to have a huge peak. He's just going to be a guy coming in, probably going to be good right away. So I think this team's going to be pretty good. It makes some noise first year, but I think it's going to be a couple years for the Falcons where we're really going to make some noise for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think he's going to be a Super Bowl contender or anything, but not to side tangent, where is Desmond Ridder now? Like, is he still in the league? Is he XFL bound?
He got traded.
No, I literally saw this the other day. I think he's on.
I think they put this guessing game on NBA TNT.
Come on, I should have known this. I wish I would have pulled this up.
I just saw this.
Cardinals. He's on the Cardinals.
Oh, watch out, Kyler.
Yeah, right?
He's a good backup for
them. The Riddler's on the way.
I don't know. That was a weird experiment, wasn't it?
Had to be there.
But you know what? I do want to go back to one more thing before we move on to Julian's story, and you kind of mentioned already. I'm so excited to see Bijan Robinson this year. I mean, we talked about this guy going into last year's draft as one of the best, like, offensive prospects that has ever came out of a draft, just because of how good of a career he had at Texas and all this. And then Arthur Smith just didn't want to give him the ball. But yeah, I think that that's like really could be like a huge part of their success. And we don't really talk about running backs like that anymore, but this guy's got the capability of doing just about anything.
I mean, he's just so agile and quick on his feet. Like, I don't know how he's able to get up and down like with that type of motion. Like, he's just unreal. It's just, if they can untap his potential, the Falcons, they just have monsters this team is just full of athletic freaks. This is why I loved the Falcons last year. Just Kyle Pitts is a specimen we've never seen at tight end before. Drake London literally can catch anything if you can get the ball somewhere in his range. And you have Bijan Robinson, one of the greatest running back prospects that ever graced the NFL. Like, there's just so much potential with this team. And now that you have a true leader like Kirk Cousins in that system, it's just, there's so much potential for this Falcons team. I can't even put it into words.
All right, Julian, what are you bringing to us today?
Yeah, so there was a pretty big trade, not big, like role player, I would say, but pretty decent trade in the NFL today. Yeah. It was Jahan Dotson getting traded from Washington for and a fifth to the Eagles for 2025 third round pick and 2 7th round picks. While I think Jahan Dotson, he played well his freshman year, not freshman year, his rookie year, his second year, he kind of had an iffy year. And in training camp, they kind of talked about how like iffy he played. He wasn't about to make a roster spot. So I think this is a good move for Philly. They got a good wide receiver three now. I feel like they've never really had like a good core wide receiver three.
Sure.
They had Quez Watkins for a while. Somebody else kind of moves in every once in a while. But now a guy behind Devontae Smith and a guy behind A.J. Brown, he's going to make some noise, I think, for them, especially with Saquon Barkley on the team.
I was such a Jahan Dotson truther last year. Like, I drafted him early on. I thought, like, he was going to go crazy last year with the Commanders, and it just never played out. He might have had, like, two good weeks, and I was, like, chirping all my league mates, and I'm like, I'm telling you, he's gonna have that game soon. He's going to have that game soon. And I ended up trading him before he had that game. So that's how it ended up working out. But, yeah, I mean, I think the biggest part of this story that's kind of weird, because it is just a wide receiver three for Philly, but this is the second trade that the Commanders and Eagles have made with each other this offseason. And that's like, you see it in other sports, and especially like in basketball and hockey, it doesn't really matter because they don't hold division titles to such like a high regard. Mm-hmm. And you'll see it occasionally in baseball, especially when a team's really starting to teeter off. But no matter how bad a team is in football, mm-hmm. they will never trade with their division mates just because of how important division is to football. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, out of all the things that happened mm-hmm. today with this story, I was like, you know, that's really weird that they keep making trades yeah. with each other. Like, the Commanders must really want the Eagles yeah. to beat the Cowboys.
So Twitter is just one of the best places that's ever been created. And I was just laughing because I saw a tweet earlier. It's like, the Eagles are like that one guy you just hate in fantasy because they just trade with the 2-3 worst teams to just take advantage of them.
Yeah.
Essentially what the Eagles done, because like, they didn't give up a lot for Jahan Dotson, and now have like three, well, they have two elite receivers and one receiver who's supposed to be really good if he can get that potential. Oh my God. No more Nelson Aguilar minutes.
And they're just picking off their division, too. They got yeah. Saquon Barkley earlier in the offseason as well that we forget
That's
about.
Bullying.
Would you rather have Jahan Dotson for a third or Keenan Allen for a fourth?
I thought of that, too. I literally thought about that, too. Because what was it, a third?
A third and 2 7ths. So I don't even know if Philly, like,
the thing about Jahan, though, is he's still young.
Yes.
And he was a great college receiver, and it's kind of the situation.
How many years he got on that contract? Because Keenan Allen's
probably
got
a couple
year.
More.
Had, Keenan's done after this year. I think Jahan's got two more.
That's probably like a little more higher in draft picks.
So it's kind of similar to what we said earlier, where the Commanders have really not had a quarterback in Jahan's time there. And, you know, we always see the stat about Terry McLaurin's caught, like, touchdown passes from 18 different quarterbacks or whatever it might be. So, you know, maybe with Hurts, I don't know. It's weird. But I wouldn't trade a third-round pick for Jahan.
No, I mean, I don't even know, like, how often they'll run three wide receiver sets, especially after signing Saquon. I feel like they're going to run the ball way more often.
Yeah.
But also, with Kelce gone, I feel like they might pass the ball more. It's just kind of awkward what Philly's going to do this year. I think they could be a very good team, or a team that may have to trade some guys after the season for not playing well.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot about in the pre-camps that Barkley's been getting a lot of like receptions out of the backfield as well. And if they turn Barkley into a running back that can catch a ball as well, he's going to be a fantasy monster if he stays healthy.
That's me and my buddies always talk about this when it comes to fantasy. And it's like, where is... How do we value Saquon Barkley this year? Because we've only ever known him as the guy that controls the Giants offense. Mm-hmm. And now he's going into an offense where the quarterback can run and is known for tush pushing or whatever it might be. And, you have two, like, elite wide receivers, a really good tight end. Like, where does he kind of fall into the mesh there? I think it makes a really good offense, but it's just going to be weird how much, if he gets used just as much as he did with the Giants. Or less.
Well, I think it. Oh, no.
Go ahead,
Julian.
It's only the first time this is going to happen.
All right. So, I think it's kind of the perfect situation for Barkley, because when he was the workload animal in New York, that's what led to his injury problems, because, like, you're getting 30 runs a game and you got to catch a ball a couple times. Now, with him having other weapons, like, they can just give him the ball, like, let's say, maybe like 15 handoffs, but then he's going to be able to give you 100% rather than him having lingering injuries. Like, you see with the new NCAA game, like, when you get tackled too many times, so everything's injured.
Yeah.
That was Barkley every game with the Giants. Now, he doesn't have to have that heavy of a workload, and I think that's crucial. It's going to make him even better of a player.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that. How we saw McCaffrey get traded from the Panthers to the Niners, it's kind of like, I feel like Saquon's going to be with them too. He gets a lot more production, but like, the production is going to be good production for a good team with a good O-line. Mm. He was on a bad team with a bad O-line. I'd say one good O-lineman in Andrew Thomas, but now he's on a team that has way more weapons. The Giants last year, they just had Saquon Barkley. I wouldn't even say Darius Slayton, maybe, but like, other than that, I feel like right now he's going to be a good player, less injuries, hopefully for him, but I'm excited to see what he's going to do this year.
All right, enough football, enough glazing the Eagles and Falcons. I'm going to get to some baseball. We're going to have some more baseball at the end of the show, but I just really want to talk about this. I saw this tweet yesterday from Jeff Passan, and it's just kind of been like, it's crazy to think about when you put it in perspective. So Aaron Judge threw 127 games in 2022, which was the year that he broke the AL home run record. Slash line, 295. We don't have to get into all the other stuff, but 49 homers, 109 RBIs. Aaron Judge threw 127 games in 2024. He's batting a .334, 47 home runs, two behind what he was in 2022, and 117 RBIs. Jeff Passan goes on to say, the last player not linked to steroids to slug this high in a full season was Ted Williams in 1957. And I just want to talk about Aaron Judge because it is actually insane what he's been able to do in the last really 5 years of his baseball career. We remember the rookie year. We remember what happened after that. And then he just turned into this all-star mammoth player who it's always been touted throughout, especially like our childhood. Mike Trout is the guy of baseball. Like he is the guy of the 2010s that he's the best player in baseball. But in all reality, I know we're in the 2020s now. The 2020s is Aaron Judge, 100%, and he's probably getting up to the point where he is just as good as Mike Trout. I don't know if you guys want to chime in at all with anything, but it's just so impressive what I see out of Aaron Judge every day, and he's not connected to steroids or anything like that.
Yeah, talk about huge. I think the big difference too between him and Mike Trout is he's actually on a marketable team. You can't make Mike Trout look significant as a Los Angeles Angel. No one really cares about that team. So the fact that you have him as a New York Yankee as well is just so marketable, especially the numbers he's doing. Like, that's just not even fair. Like, how do you stop that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like you brought up Mike Trout. I was about to say you're going to hate me for this, and I was about to say how Aaron Judge is just coming up to the Mike Trout standpoint.
Okay.
Now I feel like you could really honestly kind of put him there. Mike Trout's been out for how many years now?
I know.
And I'm one of the biggest Mike Trout fans ever. I saw him in his prime playing, and he was one of the greatest players I've ever watched in any sport play. But those injuries are just so sad to see because what he could be exactly what Aaron Judge is right now, but better.
Right.
And he could also be in New York with Judge if he really wanted to be. But he kind of just made his career what it is by staying in L.A., and it's kind of sad to see from that standpoint.
It's so weird because you mentioned market, and I think that's a big thing that people talk about. Everyone hates the Yankees, mm-hmm. but it stinks because you talk about the Yankees, and it's like they have these two faces at the top with Juan Soto and Judge, and they are just so fun to watch. Like, some people might think baseball is boring. Just watch a baseball game and watch the 3 and 4 hitter in their lineup because it's literally two and three hitter in their lineup because it's one of the most exciting things. And for me as a baseball fan that I've ever gotten to watch, and it really, like, makes me think, like, oh, man, like, this team, for, like, the first time in a long time, it feels like they have a legitimate chance to finally reach the mountaintop and win a World Series.
Yeah, I think this is just a big part about just maturing in life. Like, I remember being younger and hating these dynasty teams, like with the Golden State Warriors in their prime. I hated that team. And then, like, you look at, like, the Patriots, like, I hated that team. But really, if you just appreciate the sport, you realize how special these type of teams are. So I think now it's time to start appreciating these dynasties about to get with the teams like the Yankees.
We're going to have more baseball talk later in the show, but when we come back on the Red Zone, we're going to talk some Week 0 and college football predictions. Back here on the Red Zone, 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation, Ben Hootie, Joey LeMaster, Julian Voss, getting you prepped up for some college football. It's officially Week 0, and we start just the bender. Every weekend, there is always going to be football on from here on out. We finally made it, boys.
It's about time.
It was a long, long summer. It felt like football just couldn't come soon enough. Not only college football, we were playing college football all summer. We've been excited about the Bears. And finally, we get to watch Montana State versus New Mexico this weekend.
If only you listeners could see the goosebumps on my arms right now, guys. Like, this means something to me.
But yeah, as I said, it's Week 0. There's a couple games on the board. Nothing too crazy besides, we were just talking about it, number 10 Florida State playing Georgia Tech in Dublin. So that's a pretty cool game. And, you know, we could preview all these games if we wanted to, but we're not going to do that. We're going to save your guys' ears and care more about stuff that's really going on in the future. And that's just our predictions for college football this year and kind of some teams that we've been keeping an eye on, teams that we like. And, you know, even thinking going further, the craziest part about this year is first year of 12-man college football playoff, which is super exciting. So, Joey, I know you've definitely got 100 points that you just want to rattle off, and I'm ready to hear them. So let's go.
All right. So I'm going to go one team at a time. I'm not gonna stop hating yet. There's a team I'm gonna hate on later, and I'll hate on the whole season. So just heads up, if you're a Penn State fan, you're gonna hate listening to Red Zone. Just so you guys know. But a team I love this year is absolutely Missouri. I think it's the most underrated team in the SEC. They return pretty much everybody, which includes Luther Burden, who is the best player in college football. You will hear that now from me. And Brady Cook. They lost their running back, but outside of that, pretty much returned everybody. They have the whole coaching staff. And they were special last year. Like, I know the Ohio State game was kind of a stinker, but you beat Ohio State in a bowl game, and you had a ton of success in the SEC. They have a very weak schedule as well this year, so I think there's a real sleeper team to make the SEC championship, and this will, I believe, 100% be a playoff team.
Yeah, Missouri to me is kind of interesting because I'm pretty sure their quarterback's coming back, right?
Yeah, Brady Cook.
Yes. And then Luther Burden's going to be a great player this year, I think, too. I think he's going to have like a JSN type of thing where he's not going to go too high in the draft, but he's still going to have an impact on the team. But yeah, that's going to be a good team in a very tough conference. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs just because of how tough the SEC is, but we'll see where they go from there.
I'm going to pull this up real quick right now. I need you guys to hear the Mizzou football schedule, and then you'll understand why this team's making the playoffs, because they're pretty much just playing like FCS teams in the lower tier of the SEC. It's ridiculous.
Go ahead.
To make the playoffs, they have to beat a team in the SEC in their SEC championship, though, too. Like, if you really want them to have a good seed in the playoffs.
I mean,
unless not, they have to be undefeated, pretty much.
They got Bama and Texas A&M, which can be their tough games, but they have Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, Vanderbilt, UMass, Auburn, and then Oklahoma, I guess, kind of tough. Mississippi State, like, they're not going against the elites of the elites. Like, you're not seeing a bunch of Georgia in there, so I think this is a team that has a real chance to sneak in. Would not be surprised at all.
I counted 4 losses in that.
They didn't even lose 4 games last year. That's crazy.
Well, 4 maybe losses to me. I think Bama's going to beat them.
I can't even say that confidently.
Oklahoma, I think they're going to beat them. You said they were playing A&M too?
Yeah.
I like Connor Wayman a lot. I think that they're going to also pretty much beat Missouri. It also depends on what teams are home and what teams are away in those games to me too.
I'm so afraid for what A&M's going to do to Notre Dame week 1.
Yeah, I know. That's scary. Yes. For the listeners that don't know, me and Joey are both Notre Dame fans, so there will definitely be some great coverage here on out for Notre Dame.
We'll have some passionate Thursdays
will be ILL.
Julian will be chirping us, even though he just said he's an Illinois fan, which
football's a fun time for him.
Yeah, I got us a championship in 2028.
We can talk about our college football teams all day. First of all, didn't even realize Iowa was top 25 this year, which is kind of crazy. I like Oklahoma State a lot. And it's not even like anything like crazy, but Ollie Gordon's like a game changer.
It's just not fair.
So much fun. And I'm not even saying this because Oklahoma State's my go-to team online in college football, because they are, because I love Ollie Gordon, but I'm just excited for Oklahoma State. I think the Cowboys are fun. They got some aura with them with the orange and black. Like, I think that's awesome. So this might not be the most in-depth breakdown because I'm not very keen with Oklahoma State's roster, but I think Ollie Gordon's all you really need to be a good
team.
Here's
what matters at the end of the day is you can have all the skills and you can throw all the stats you want in front of my face. If you don't have aura, you're not winning games at the end of the day.
Right.
They're set.
I'll always say this. Like, I hate Michigan with my guts. But Michigan's got like the best gear in the world. Like everything that they wear, it's like
Jordan.
I wish I could buy it, but I don't like you, so I can't buy it.
No, but here's the thing. Like I like despise Penn State like with every ounce of my being, but their whiteouts are special.
Yeah, it's the best.
It's not even fair.
Yeah, for me, I feel like this is going to come down to. I feel like a Big Ten team might really be the one to do it this year again. I think it might be between Ohio State and Oregon. I like both those teams a lot. I hate to say it because as a U of I fan, I hate Ohio State, but Oregon coming into the Big Ten, I think they're going to try to make some noise right away. They play Ohio State this year, I'm pretty sure October 12th.
Okay.
So that's, I think they're going to be the biggest game of the year between, at least for the Midwest. Mm-hmm. But I like Oregon a lot this year. I think Oregon might honestly make it to the national championship. Mm-hmm. But a sleeper team I've honestly been looking at a lot. I do also like Oklahoma State, but I do like Arizona a little bit too.
That's a great answer.
I like Arizona. I love McMillan, the 6'5 receiver. They have a great quarterback coming back. I just think that team with that duo could do a lot of damage.
Yeah, absolutely. So can we hate for a little bit?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm the biggest Penn State denier, and I think James Franklin just makes me laugh every time he's in a serious game. 3-17 versus top 10 opponents, and 2 of those came with Saquon Barkley, so technically does not count if we're being real. So that's 1-17. But then just, I see Drew Aller get this like Heisman like recognition, and I say it's like the funniest thing in the world. And it's just every year Penn State like starts off in preseason rankings 10 and just never finishes there, and it really grinds my gears. So there'll be a lot of Penn State hate watches coming from me this year for sure.
I know we've been talking about teams a lot, and you mentioned this Ohio State-Oregon game. that is happening October 12th.
Oh, this weekend, man.
There was a huge discourse online about this, and if I'm just trying to tell our viewers, if you haven't seen what this weekend entails, clear your schedule for October 12th, because it's probably the greatest weekend of college football you can ever ask for. So, number two, this is what most likely a lot of these rankings will change based on what happens, but as we stand right now, looking at this weekend, number two, Ohio State at number three, Oregon. Number six, Ole Miss at number 13, LSU. Number eight, Penn State at number 23, USC. And then to end the night, your nightcap, or excuse me, this is an afternoon game. I don't know why the schedule is like this. Number four, Texas at number 16, Oklahoma. Dude, unbelievable.
Wow. You know what the crazy part is? I saw a tweet about this. Did you know October 12th is the top five most like booked wedding date of the year?
So that's where the discourse came from, because everyone's like,
how selfish is that? Like, you want to be happily married to your couple on one of the greatest days in college football.
But people book their weddings like 2 years in advance. These schedules aren't. Actually, these schedules might be out.
I don't think the schedules are. I think the games are out, not the schedules. Like the weeks that the
games.
Oh,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no,
that's an electric weekend, though.
No, if you really care about sports, you just can't get married in the fall.
I want to go back to the 12-man playoff, and what kind of I'm gonna ask you guys, what kind of situations do you think that this is gonna create this year? Because we've been so used to this discourse where it's been four teams get in, you know, should this team get in because they won their conference, but Georgia's only loss is Alabama. I'm just giving out hypotheticals here. Mm-hmm. What do you think that bottom half that just misses out, like, what do you think the discourse is going to be there? Is it, oh, we came in third in the Big Ten, we should have been in it? I don't know. It's just, I think it's going to be very interesting this year. I want to hear what you guys think.
Yeah, I think they're at least going to have at least two to three Big Ten and SEC schools in there. I think it's going to be around like six total between those two big conferences. Then they're going to bring in, obviously, an ACC team's going to be in there as well. But then we get to the sleeper teams where we're going to have the smaller conferences. Obviously, the Pac-12, RIP, not here anymore.
Yeah.
But then there's going to be those other teams, maybe like Coastal Carolina, a team like that that's going to get in. I just believe that the first rounds is going to be a blowout. I think it's always going to be a blowout between two teams. Then when we get to the top eight or so teams, that's when we're going to be like, all right, this is the real playoffs right here.
Yeah,
absolutely. And my take on this, I think people are going to get really offended how many SEC teams are going to make the playoffs. I think it's going to be a lot higher than three. And there's going to be like teams that, let's say, like Kansas, like, we finished in the third in the Big 12, yet the sixth team the SEC is making in the playoffs before us. How is that? And I think there's going to be a lot of people getting offended just because, like, how high caliber, like, it's different in the South. And I think it's just going to come up in a lot of playoff arguments. I think it's going to be a lot of fans are going to get offended, because I refuse to believe a team like, let's say, Ole Miss finishes, like, in a bad spot in the SEC, they're going to get in higher than a lot of these other teams that aren't in the SEC.
I think the same thing's going to go for the Big Ten, too. I think there's going to be a lot more than three Big Ten teams that will make it, just considering the fact that I'm trying to pull up the Big Ten. I know I could probably rattle it off the top of my head.
Ohio State, it's going to be Oregon, and then Penn State, unfortunately, will make it and have a pretty easy record, and then Michigan as well.
I mean, might beat them, though.
I just mentioned, Iowa's top 25 right now, technically. Like, they're not going to make it, but
I'll protest.
It's crazy how deep the Big Ten is, because the team that just lost in the national championship is part of the Big Ten, too. Mm-hmm. We don't even take into account that as well. And the winner of the Big Ten was... the team that won the national championship is also in the Big Ten. So, I don't know. This whole conference realignment thing, the whole 12-man college football, it's weird, because this is going to be the first year for really what feels like the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
Everyone's been so used to, you know, wherever you're from, that's where you play. Well, now we have UCLA and USC in the Big Ten playing a bunch of farm boys at Iowa. Yeah. Like, it's just crazy how it works out.
It's going to be a little bit messy at the start, but it's eventually going to work out. But just these next 2-3 years, we are going to see some crazy teams make the playoffs. And honestly, I'm all for it. I love the chaos.
Yeah. It's like the crazy simulations on college football. I don't know if you guys have gotten any wild teams that have made the playoffs that you're like, you shouldn't be here, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah,
like,
the Boston College three seed.
Yeah, like Boston College, or I don't even know.
Marshall.
Marshall's always in there. But I don't know. It's going to be an exciting year for college football for sure.
Can we take a quick look at my Illini, though?
What you got?
Let's hear it. Hype up the
Eastern
listeners.
Illinois, that's going to be a dub for us.
Okay.
We play number 22, Kansas. We're not going to talk about that one. Uh-huh. Central Michigan, that's a dub. Okay. Nebraska, that's a dub.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State, heck no. Purdue, Illinois.
Nah,
that'll be a close game, but I think that's a field goal type of game.
Uh-huh.
Then it's the big game against Michigan. We almost beat them a couple years ago.
I remember that.
Do you guys remember that? It was a bad call. It was like a PI call or something like that.
That was with a field goal, too, that happened, right? They missed a field goal.
So JJ should not have won that game. Oregon. I don't want to talk about that one either. Minnesota, that's a dub. Michigan State, that's a dub. Rutgers, that's probably going to be like our crazy loss, losing to Rutgers. And Northwestern, they better beat Northwestern in that horrible stadium they have.
Yeah.
So I think they could have a little bit of step up here, but also Altmyer, I don't know how I feel about him. They have a good defense again. It just depends on if Altmyer can just hold his own.
That's bowl game bound right there.
Yep.
It is.
Yep.
You mentioned Kansas. Why am I also excited for Kansas? Jalen Daniels is awesome.
I can't hype up Kansas on this microphone. I have too many friends that get a little too excited if I hyped up Kansas.
But the thing about Kansas is, like, we're so used to them being a basketball school when out of nowhere they become a football school. It's like, what are you doing here? But I like it. I don't mind it. I play with Kansas a good amount in college football as well, and I feel like we have
Kobe.
We've talked about college football. Oh, yeah, right. And it's just been so much fun. I don't know. I like Kansas as a football school.
I mean, the Big 12 isn't that strong as well, so I wouldn't be surprised if Kansas was able to, like, cause some chaos. But, again, there's going to be so much chaos this year, and I can't legally hype up Kansas on this microphone, so I will not.
All right, before we wrap this segment up, I just want... Who you think is going to win the national championship this year? Straight up, just if you were to put money on it right now, who is winning the national championship?
Ohio State.
Yeah, I'm going Ohio State as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go really creative. I've thought long and hard about this. I really looked at all the stats, and I'm just going to go Georgia.
Okay. I mean, it's not a bad look at all.
You can't bet against Georgia.
But Judkins.
Yeah, and my thing with Ohio State was, Will Howard going to be able to do it? That's my thing with them. They have so many weapons. Yeah. Jeremiah Smith is a freshman. I think it's going to make an impact right away, too. But Will Howard scares me, just like the way their quarterback last year scared me. But
and
I think Will Howard
is a little bit better. Syracuse,
yes.
Right? I can't think of his name right now.
That just shows how bad That just shows how bad he was last year. He went from Ohio State to Syracuse.
Yeah, it's interesting.
They brought
in
Julian Sain, too, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he might get some tick, too.
They have so many weapons in Ohio State. If I'm an Ohio State fan, I would be disgusted with Ryan Day if this isn't the year.
They, frankly, need to win this year just so they can get back at Michigan. But all done with college football. We'll talk more of college football next week, especially that Iowa-Illinois State game, as we mentioned. But when we come back, we're going to be talking some Major League Baseball here on the Red Zone. 103.3 WZND, Pulse of Redbird Nation, back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Joy LeMaster, Julian Voss. And it's the heat of summer. It's the thick of summer towards the end of it. And that means baseball is almost over. So we are in a very, very tight race in baseball right now, with summer considering the most open year in baseball of all time. And what I mean by that is, it is being projected, with all these crazy projections that we give in sports, that it will be the first time since 2014 that a team does not win 100 games in Major League Baseball, meaning this year is as open for anyone to win it. We talked about the Yankees earlier. You know, you look at Baltimore is really good, the Phillies, and you can't count out the Avengers and the Dodgers. But we're going to keep it local first before we go wide, and let's talk some Cubs. We're all obviously Cubs fans here. Big win today. Miguel Amaya, grand slam. Justin Steele continuing his dominance. 10 strikeouts, 7 innings pitched. Currently sitting 2 games under 500. Guys, any one of you could take it over. Where do we think we're at with this team at this point? It's been such a weird year, and it continues to feel weird.
Only thing I can say is it's been disappointing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so disappointing. This team started out so well. They were playing so good in the beginning, but that first game when you see Justin Steele get injured, you're kind of like, oh, it's going to be one of those type of years.
Yeah.
Then the trade deadline comes around. You think they're going to make some moves to try to get some good young players, and they're like, oh, they trade for Isaac Paredes, who's also very good still, but just like, what kind of direction are they trying to go in? They try to bring in some win-now guys. They're trying to play their young guys. Obviously, they're both not meshing well at all. So you got to choose a direction. And Jed Hoyer, he's just been such an iffy GM for me because he just does not have any direction at all with this team. And I feel like right now with this team being at the record they have at 62 and 65, I want to get behind the Cardinals, which I love right now because I hate the Cardinals.
Actually, 63 and 65 were a half game behind the Cardinals. Oh, that's as of today.
Okay.
I just want to help you out.
Yeah, but I just don't like the way this team's roster. I love the roster, but I don't love the way that they're just trying to construct their direction with it.
Sure.
I'm going to be honest, Ben. I've been waiting all Red Zone to hear you rant about the Cubs because you are kind of number one Cubs fan in the office right now. And I've seen Twitter and it's like, oh man, if only Ben had Red Zone like during this prime, it was like this Cubs mess up.
Oh my
I've
God.
Really been waiting for your rant.
It's been, I think Julian put it perfectly, disappointing season. I think when me and Mikey and Braden last hung up the mics last spring, it was like, I don't even know. We probably were above 500, honestly, at that point, and things were just looking up, and we were so excited. And who would have thought that 3 months later, it's like, they're not that good. I like what you said about Jed Hoyer, and I think I just go back to the other day. They just cut ties with Hector Neris, and it's like, what are we doing? Like, exactly. That guy was literally our – and I'm fine that they cut him. I just lost my train of thought. I'm fine that they cut him because he's been bad. But why – you can just tell that that was a really bad move, and that was him admitting that that was a really bad move, and he's done that in the past with other players. And it's just frustrating. I've been frustrated all summer long. I wish the offense would hit better. They have two aces that have been dominant all summer, but then some days they want to score. And in all reality, if they just never had that fall off in June, I think we'd be sitting pretty, like, looking really close to a wild card spot. But, man, I don't know. They do have the easiest schedule in baseball from here on out, so that's, like, the only thing to hang your head pretty high about. But as we said, the National League is so – really, all of Major League Baseball is so competitive that they have so much ground to make up. We'll have to see what happens. I don't know.
I have a question I want to hang to the both of you guys real quick. So we talked about Jed Hoyer and kind of the mess of what this roster currently is, but how much of this do we put on Craig Counsell?
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
It's interesting, but I feel like it's really just not as much on – yes, he's made some bad managing mistakes in some certain games – but to an extent, it's really just not on him. Like, Jed's the one
roster.
Yes, Jed constructed the team. And he just said, like, a month ago that he doesn't want to pay a guy over $250 million.
That's another part about Jed that's frustrating.
What are you trying to do if you're not going to try to bring a big star in, like Juan Soto, possibly this offseason?
Yeah.
That's a big spot of your team you need is a big power hitter. You're not going to go for the number one guy for that?
Maybe the number one guy in the last 10 years.
Exactly. So, like,
besides when Judge was in
free agent. What are you trying to do?
I don't really know. There's definitely some points where you do have to put the blame on Counsell. Earlier in the year, especially when that fall off came around, it was like, all right, players are underperforming. Counsell doesn't put this roster together. This is what he was given. But there's also another part of it where Counsell's big thing that made him one of the best managers, in quotes, best managers in baseball, was the fact that he was able to make so much out of so little in Milwaukee. And that's why he succeeded. And Milwaukee's still really, really good. So I think you do have to put some of it on him to this point, and really you just kind of got to see what happens as we go along here. They're not going to fire him. They just gave him the biggest contract of all time. But I think next year would be like a big, like, depending on what kind of roster they bring in, big, like, telling stick of how much do we really put the blame on Counsell. The one thing I hate about Counsell, though, is how he always is just like – They'll lose by a run, and he'll go on the mic, he'll go on the press after, and it's just like, oh man, Craig, like what happened today? He's like, oh, we just couldn't hit today, like, and he does that every single day, every single day, whenever they lose. So I don't know, it's frustrating.
I miss Joe Maddon.
Joe Maddon was awesome.
I miss Joe Maddon so much.
Like, drinking wine in his post game press conference, just enjoying life.
It's such a different culture for the Cubs, I feel like, right now, because you don't really have a guy that's like commanding on your team, like a good captain of your team. Back in the day, Rizzo was that guy, but then when Rizzo was gone, it was Contreras. Right now, who is it? Who is it?
Like, felt like it was going to be Dansby, but Dansby's struggling with his own stuff. I want to move on from the Cubs. We talk about culture, and you know, it might not be the best culture on the north side right now, but it can't get much worse than it is on the south side right now. Grady's boys don't quit. Grady Sizemore, now the head coach of the Chicago White Sox. They fired Pedro Grifol a couple weeks back. 31-97. Your 2024 Chicago White Sox on pace to become the worst team in Major League history.
Wow.
There's really not much to say about that.
No. Like, I mean, we talked about it. I'll go back to this, like, going back to it earlier in the year, like, with Red Zone. We obviously would talk about the Sox, and it's like, yeah, you know, it couldn't get much worse, but it did get much worse.
Yeah.
Like, it really did. And this team is just all-time bad, and I guess that's all you really do need to go over that.
Yeah, the construction's just such a mess. But, like, so something I always wonder as a player is, like, when you're losing that bad, like, how do you get motivated to come out every game? Like,
I mean, look at Robert. Look how bad he's been playing lately.
He's brutal.
Yeah.
It's been bad.
It's been bad. I can't believe how bad that team has been. And I don't think there's much turning it around because they can't even get a top five draft pick this year. let's talk about the rest of baseball. As we said, competitive year. You look at the AL, the Yankees and Orioles and Red Sox all over 500. Yankees and Orioles, the two best teams in the American League, though. And then this AL Central that we thought was going to be so bad this year. We already saw how bad the White Sox were. Somehow the AL Central is the best division in baseball with three teams that were kind of like on the fence are all three of the best teams in baseball, Guardians, Twins, and Royals. What do you guys kind of like think of the AL? I mean, we still got a month left, but if you were to take like a crystal ball right now and say, hey, I think this team could make the World Series, who do you guys think would it be personally?
I think it's always the Yankees' year to lose.
Yeah.
But I love Baltimore this year.
Me too.
I love them this year. Their pitching, they got so much better pitching now. Corbin Burns is now on the team.
Yep.
And then their hitters are progressing so well. And it seems like Jackson Holliday is finally just becoming like a good hitter in baseball.
Yeah, it looks so good. It feels good. What about you, Joe?
Yeah, so I don't always go off statistics. And sometimes I just do off vibes. I look at the Boston Celtics finally getting over the hump and get the job done.
Sure.
And the Chiefs, they get the job done. So I think it's just a kind of a year for the big teams. So I'm not betting against the Yankees. It just kind of feels right.
I know there's so many powerhouses in the National League, and we'll talk about them shortly here. But it's kind of crazy to think, like, to count out the Yankees because I just was telling you about them earlier. It's Judge and it's Soto. And they got a good pitching staff finally, a good enough pitching staff, I should say. Jazz Chisholm's going to be back soon, and he was ultimate vibes when he was healthy. But he'll be back here shortly. And then Baltimore, too. I like them both a lot this year. I would say if I were to take a crystal ball, I'm not picking between the Yankees and Orioles, but I will tell you one of them will win the World Series this year.
Nice.
National League, tight as ever. It was a weird situation early on where it was kind of the Dodgers and Phillies dominating. The Brewers were also threw their name in the hat. But for some reason, the rest of the National League, and you can even kind of throw the Cubs into that territory because they've been hot recently, but some teams have really, really been really good in the National League, and that includes the Mets, the Diamondbacks, the Padres, who the Diamondbacks and Padres are on the heels of the Dodgers in terms of that division. Fun National League this year, other than the NL Central, of course, who the Brewers are just running away with it, but let's do it again. Crystal ball. Give me a team that you think could win the World Series this year in the National League.
I think from Philly losing it in the conference championship last year, I think it's going to be their year now to win it.
Okay.
I think they're going to go to the NL this year. And I feel like a sleeper team right now, I think the Braves are going to fall off because of all their injuries they've had. But if the Mets can somehow sneak in, we've seen what they could do in the playoffs in the past. But I just also don't trust that team at all because it's the Mets.
Yeah.
But
beat the Mets.
The Dodgers, always going to be the Dodgers in the playoffs. I never trust them in the playoffs. They were lucky that COVID year. But in Milwaukee, I hate Milwaukee, so I'm not going to ever bet on them.
Yeah, I'm going to bounce off that with the Philadelphia one. It's just last year seemed like it was finally going to be it for Bryce Harper. You're going into young Diamondbacks teams like, all right, we're going to get here. It's time to get the job done. And then you don't. That's just something that just haunts you for the rest of your life. And I'm such a big Bryce Harper enjoyer. And I want to see him go all the way, so I got to rock with the Phillies.
Yeah, I don't want to make a pick and then, no, I'm just kidding. If I were to make a pick, I would go with the Phillies, but I do want to talk about some of these other teams. I think we're all saying Phillies. Dodgers obviously make a ton of sense. But the one team I do want to talk about, and Julian, you mentioned them, Arizona, who started the year, you know, a little under expectations, especially a year after you've just won the National League, but they've been on an absolute heater since probably end of June, starting in July, and they've been able to pull so many games over 500, including only four games back of the Dodgers. So they were just in the World Series a year ago. The team has only gotten better since then. I'm not saying they're going back because it was kind of a miracle run that they even did it last year, but that's definitely a team, I think, to keep your eye on.
Yeah, I agree with that because a team's always going to have a little bit of an iffy year the next year after making it to the championship. It's kind of happened in every single sports league. So Corbin Carroll's a great player. If he could lead this team to another World Series, then we'll see what they can do with it.
So that's going to wrap it up today on the Red Zone. Hopefully everybody enjoyed it because it was a hell of
a day. We enjoyed ourselves, Joey. It was fun doing it with
it
you.
Pleasure.
Julian, pleasure as always. We'll be back every Thursday for the rest of the semester here on the Red Zone.